Welcome to Halacha in a Year, where we can get to learn all the most relevant halacha through the prism of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. You are listening to Rabbi Yaakov Tramp. This shiur is kindly sponsored by the Moshe Group and CA in Zuchus of Rivka Bela Bas Nechama Shifra and in honor of Rabbi Tramp. Today we're going to learn the halachas of monetary claims and testimony. This is Kitzur Shulchan Aruch Simon Kuf Pei Aleph 181 Part 2. Really the main focus today is testimony. We're going to look at four basic concepts today. That is the responsibility of testifying in court, the limits on witnesses, hired hands, and care about taking an oath, a shavua. Let's jump straight in. The responsibility to testifying. When must a person testify on behalf of another? So we're talking about halachic witnesses, which are men above bar mitzvah. So when must such a person appear in court? So if a person is qualified and he has witnessed something which will benefit a Jew, he must appear in court when summoned. Doesn't matter that he is a lone witness or with another person. No, he must still testify. But isn't testimony of a single witness invalid? So it has to be with another person. So why, if he's the only person, does it matter? So we know that in certain instances, the Eid Echad, a one witness, actually does contribute. And that is he can require an oath. He can levy a shavua against another person. Or in the case of Isurim, before a sin is committed, therefore he would be required in those cases to testify even by himself. What is the punishment for a person who decides to withhold their testimony? They say, I'm not going, I know, but I can't be bothered. I don't want to go through it. I don't want to be cross-examined. So I want to just stay out of this. So if one withholds testimony when obligated, he will have to answer in the heavenly court for that as well. This is seen as a grave sin. May one just stand next to another witness without saying anything in order to intimidate the debtor into confessing? So let's say you are not a witness, but you sit next to somebody who is a witness and you pretend as if you are the second witness. That is not allowed. This is midvara sheker tirchak. Even if the person is obligated, you're not allowed to make it seem like you're a witness when you are not a witness. May one testify based on information that somebody else told you. So let's say you have a trusted friend, a person who's a very, very reliable source, and they said they saw something. May you treat it as if you saw that and present it in court. The answer is no. You may only do it if you actually saw it firsthand as well. Can a witness testify about a sin which was already committed? No. The witnesses are not believed for past transgressions, and because that's considered just spreading bad reports. So therefore, it's only something which is actionable, not something which is about what happened in the past and is no basis for any course of action. May one testify based on written records or reminders? So let's say one took down notes and is now looking at those notes and is reminded as to what to say. In that case, yes, if the notes will jog the memory, then it's fine. But if the litigant reminds him directly and says, oh, remember we saw and this is what happened, that's not allowed. That would not be allowed. It's all right if somebody else were to remind him, or if he has notes which remind him of the situation, but he cannot hear it directly from the litigant. We move into our next concept, that is limits on witnesses. Is it permissible to accept payment to testify? So if one already saw the incident, so one witnessed a episode that occurred, one may not accept any compensation for witnessing. He is obligated to come, and the money is going to cloud it. If a person pays a fellow and says, look, I need you in advance to be here to witness XYZ transaction, then one is allowed to be paid for the inconvenience or the time spent witnessing in that situation. That happens very commonly. So we're not talking about somebody who's being paid to witness after an event happened, but before the event, you can pay somebody to witness it so that you have proof that in fact did occur as expressed. When is a witness disqualified due to personal benefit? So any conflict of interest, benefit or personal interest, even if it's remote, will disqualify the witnesses, and the court will decide in certain cases if that is a conflict of interest. Can a Jew testify in secular court on behalf of a non-Jew against a Jew? So if the testimony would make the Jew liable for more than Torah law would require him to, then it's forbidden. Otherwise, it's permitted. If the Jew agrees to testify, he must follow through to avoid Chil Hashem and not renege upon his commitment. Who is considered disqualified as a relative for testimony? You know that you can't be related. So anybody or any relatives, either the litigant, the judges, or other witnesses, even through their wives, are disqualified. So even if they are formally related, they're disqualified. The witnesses must inform the court so they can rule on their eligibility. This happens most commonly when it comes to kibbutim at weddings. People have no idea that an aid actually cannot be a person related to one or to each other. Very important to check these people out if they qualify for aidus. May a witness testify alongside other a known sinner? So let's say two people witness the event. One's a kosher person, the other one's a questionable fellow. Is the kosher guy allowed to appear in court on this particular case? The answer is no. If he knows the other witness is disqualified because of his sins he commits, he may not be with him as well. What kind of sins disqualify a person from court? So a person, we're talking about somebody who willfully and knowingly violates Torah prohibitions and which are accepted by the community and he has not repented. But if he's unknowing or it's ignorance, he may not be disqualified to testify alongside such a person. We move to our third concept today, that is hired hands. What's the halacha about giving the power of attorney in a dispute to somebody else to represent oneself in the court case? So, if both parties, the claimant and the defendant, are in town and one of them just doesn't want to have to deal with it, the other person he's fighting with, is in argumentation with, is a strong person and he just doesn't want to have to deal with that, so he hires an aggressive person to represent him, that is not allowed. That is not acceptable. What about if it's just for payments? So meaning like that, so the person's accepting this because they need a parnasa, then there are some poskim who allow this as well. Unfortunately, this is a big issue today to a large degree in the landscape of Tanim, where people hire very argumentative people oftentimes to shout down and intimidate the other person, and it's often very inappropriate and turns into a circus. There is a correct way of doing it where people are hired for their expertise and they can help arrange claims, but oftentimes what it's turned into is precisely this illegitimate form, which is just another person to shout or intimidate the other person. If one of the litigants is not in town, is not able to be there, then it is in fact a mitzvah to hire somebody to represent them, to give the power of attorney. But if it's just to aggressively shout down the other person and intimidate them, that's completely unacceptable. We move to our last concept today, and that is the care taken about oaths, shavuos. Should one take an oath in Beis Din? So even if it's a truthful oath, one should try to avoid taking an oath. One should be very careful about taking an oath in Beis Din. What should one do if one knows the other party is going to take an oath and the oath is false? So one has money to demand of another person. They have to take a shvur because of the way the halachic constellation of this particular argument works. But one knows that person is going to lie under oath. In that case, one should try to compromise to avoid that person taking an oath. Why is that? The reason is because the Torah says, Shavuas Hashem tiyeh ben shneim, the oath of Hashem should be between the two of them. And the Gemara learns from here that Ashashua chala al shneim, the shua is a responsibility of both of them. So if you're the claimant and a shua has been taken on the other person, you bear a responsibility in the oath which is taken, which is why you have to be so careful to avoid it being a false oath. Even if it's the other person, one may need to compromise in order to avoid this situation. It shows you that this is not just about getting the money, this is also about the Kiddush Shem Shemayim, which is what this all comes down to in the end of the day, which is sometimes and oftentimes very easily forgotten when it's about ego, honor, and money, which is kind of brings us why it's so important to know and apply these halachas. Have a wonderful and meaningful day.